Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome back to the Red Sox Precap Podcast, your podcast from the Old Monster Podcast Network, where we recap the series that just ended, preview the series that's about to start. I'm your host, Keaton DeRocher, joined this time by Bob Osgood. Bob, thanks for being here in a pinch, covering a little scheduling issue.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in the right-hander. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's been a minute since we've done one of these podcasts. We have had a lot of scheduling overlaps, and then we had Matt leaving and some other podcast issues or just podcast scheduling things that we were working out. But we were looking to get back right on track, delivering this pod to you twice a week after every series and getting all that back on track. And then naturally, at the last minute, we had another scheduling issue. But thankfully, Bob was able to get in here so we can keep this going. So
yeah,
we have a nice little series here. The Athletics to recap, so let's dive on in. Red Sox win the series 2-1. Game one, Pivetta versus Koenig. Red Sox get the win 6-1. Pivetta, another brilliant start. 8 innings pitched, 1 run that was earned, 3 hits, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, and then Phillips Valdez finished it off. 3 hits from Ruff Snyder, 2 hits from Bogarts. We had homers from JD Martinez and Rafael Devers. What were your thoughts on yet another spectacular performance from Nick Pivetta, and were you kind of hoping he was going to go out there for the ninth?
I actually didn't think he was going to go back out, mainly because they already gave him that one complete game, and he's just thrown deep into games quite a bit, which is a good problem to have, and he was pitching to contact all night. You know, he just had 3 strikeouts, but he was throwing strikes, had 10 whiffs. And his fastball was at 94, which is about a tick higher than it normally is. He was maxing out over 96, which is just a really good place for him to be. The curveball was good. He's throwing with confidence, acting like a madman out there. And, you know, it's really just been, it's been a fascinating stretch. I can't remember the last pitcher that looked so, or, you know, so poor for 3 or 4 starts and so dominant for the 9 starts since that, you know?
Right.
He's just on this stretch. I mean, when you look at his game line, it's since those first three starts, it's craziness. And they're all 6, 7, 8, 9 going deep into games and pitching with confidence. And, you know, since those first three starts, he's 6-2 with a 2.29 ERA and keeping the walks down. So I was glad that they, you know, he was at 100. And you're always risking getting close to 120. I think the fact that he already had a complete game, I was okay with pulling him there, especially since I didn't think the A's were much of a threat to come back there.
Yeah, at 6-1, it was a bit inconsequential. It was better off to just finish the game than worry about getting him another complete game.
Yeah.
We didn't run into a save situation in this series, but since it's been a while since we have done one of these podcasts, and we recently had I believe it was either Chris Mason or Chris Cotillo who had a conversation with the Red Sox pitching coach and asked, is Tanner Houck the closer of the Red Sox? And the response was, it sure looks that way. So since this is, we talk about, basically every time we get together to talk about the Red Sox, we're going to talk about what's going on with the back of the bullpen.
Yeah.
Tanner Houck did get the most recent save for the Red Sox. What are your thoughts on Tanner Houck being the closer and just kind of the back end of the bullpen right now?
Yeah, and then on Monday when the first two guys got on, I think he started at least throwing a few throws to start to get loose, so it seemed like they would have gone to him. He was starting to move around there. I think it's as good of an option as you have. I mean, from when we were talking in March at the previews, I thought that they should have gotten a surefire back-end guy, and I've wanted to trade for one for 2 months because I think it's cost them about 8 games this season.
Yeah.
But looking at all the arms out there, I don't know if I see Houck long-term for his whole career as like a shutdown closer just because of the command issues. I think he's the type that, you know, you can kind of tell right away. You might walk a guy and hit a guy, and it sometimes takes him an inning to get going, and then in the second and third innings, he can be dominant or something like that. So he might be the type that you want to have someone getting loose if the first guy gets on, but when he's going and both, especially on the Sunday outing, which was about 8 pitches, and he had just that, you know, bowling ball, Clay Holmes type of sinker thing that throwing at 96, 97, if he's got that going, he can have quick innings, and I just think he's as good of an option as they have right now while still wanting to make a trade and hopefully bring up a power arm from AAA later in the year.
I'm not as concerned with the walks. I think when you have really good stuff and like overpowering strikeout ability, like he does, I think that kind of makes up for it. Like we got firsthand viewing of Craig Kimbrel and his walks. And yeah, we also, while it did make for some stressful save situations at times, and we saw, was it like 3 or 4 seasons in a row of 40-plus saves?
Yeah.
So I'm not as concerned, I think. And then like Kenley Jansen is another one for the Dodgers who like consistently had walks per nines up in the fours and was still shoving out saves. So sure. I think the elite closers, when you have really, really good stuff, like I think Houck does, can get around it, although it does get rather stressful at times.
Yeah, I'd just like to see his K per nine tick up a little bit. You know, it's been around 11 for the last 2 years, and it's 8.5 this year. So if he's walking 3.5 and K-ing 8.5, that's not a great discrepancy. But you're right, if he can get back to get those strikeouts going, and especially the way that he looked on Sunday, you know, they might have something. And maybe he gets comfortable and gets on a roll, and it's certainly, I don't know, I'd rather go that route than anything I've seen in the last 2 months. So let's roll with it for now.
Yeah, I dig it. All right, game 2. Josh Winkowski versus James Kaprielian. Red Sox get the win 10-1 here, running away with it. Winkowski, 5 innings pitched, 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 3 Ks. His second start here in the majors. Diekman went 1 inning, allowing 1 run, and then Sawamura, Brazier, and Danish finished it all off with clean innings. We had 2 hits apiece from JBJ and Story, 3 hits apiece from Verdugo and Bogarts, and homers from Devers and Bogarts. Devers, I believe, at this point had homered in 4 in a row. What were your thoughts on Winkowski's second run here in the majors?
Yeah, I felt like, you know, before getting in with Winkowski, Wednesday night was just a repeat game of Tuesday. It was 6-0 after 4 in both games. I think the Red Sox went 1-1, 1-3 on Tuesday night in the first 4 innings, and then 1-2, 1-2. So they scored in every inning, And in both of those games, Devers hit a home run that pretty much finished them off in the fourth inning, and it was over at that point. So just like identical games both nights at Fenway there. With Winkowski, you know, he threw five innings. I thought he mixed up his pitches. He threw strikes for the most part. You know, mostly throwing sinkers for his fastball, but he used that 50% of the time, and then threw his off-speed, 33% slider and 16% changeup. So it was good to see a guy throwing three pitches, throwing them for strikes, and, you know, it's against Oakland, and it would be interesting to see that type of outing in July when they have that stretch against the AL East. But I think he's a good depth starter and a possible you know, bullpen arm in the second half. I don't know if it's his motion or his repertoire, but he reminds me of Brandon Workman a little bit when I watch him pitch. Kind of just the big hook and a similar windup.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. Jaron Duran was recalled for this game when Christian Arroyo got put on the COVID list. He probably would have been recalled earlier when Kike Hernandez got hurt and put on the IL. However, he had just been sent down, and he had to wait 10 days. But now he is back. So, with Kike and Arroyo out and Duran back, first, how should the infield and the outfield look right now? And who should be on the bench? Which I know is a lot, but just who is your preferred lineup here with who we have at the major league level? And then, follow-up question, when all those guys are healthy, should Duran stay? Or do you think he should go back to AAA and get everyday at-bats?
Yeah, so in terms of what they have now, I mean, hopefully it's just another couple of days. It sounds like Kike is more of a minimum stay, at least they think, and Arroyo is on the COVID list, so that could be anything. So, you know, it might be another game or two. You know, they have a lot of lefties between Verdugo and Bradley and Duran and Franchi, who all can play the outfield. So I think when there's a left-handed pitching that Ref Snyder will play. But I would probably, I just think Duran should probably be the odd man out right now, especially the way that Franchi has been hitting the ball. Like, he's just hit some absolute rockets. He had a 114-mile-per-hour hit on Thursday that, you know, some of these balls look like they could kill somebody that are off his bat. So he's in a pretty good place, and I think he deserves some time out there. So I would say that when at least one of them is back, that I think Duran would be the one to go down, especially with Ref Snyder being a right-handed hitter that they can use against lefties. And you saw it in the game Thursday, as soon as they brought Puck in, you know, they kind of flipped everything around and brought Ref Snyder and Dahlbeck into the game instead of Duran and Franchi. So that's my guess, especially also, you know, there was the play with Story on Thursday where he probably should have been called off by Duran, and he might not have been comfortable or confident to make that call and ended up falling in for a double. And that's where things kind of unraveled. And Cora made a comment after the game that it was Duran's ball. So I don't know. I just wonder if defensively they might just not think that he's ready, especially for a contending team.
I think he's ready. I think he should stay. I think he should be getting every day at bats, but at the major league level.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd like to see him kind of knock JBJ to the bench, and then they use him as a fourth outfielder and defensive replacement.
I agree with that. I thought from the beginning there should have been another outfielder here, preferably that was a right-handed hitter to platoon with Bradley.
Yeah.
I think that might be next year with Duran.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just going off of what I think they're going to do rather than what I want to see happen. I want to see Duran play. I want to see the drag bunts and the stolen bases and, you know, triples in the alley and that whole thing. It would be a lot more exciting. It's just I'm getting this vibe that they're only going to him in emergencies, you know?
Yeah. All right, game three today, this afternoon game. Hill versus Blackburn. Red Sox take the loss 4-3. Hill went 5 2/3 innings pitched, 7 hits, 4 runs, 3 earned, no walks, 4 strikeouts. Sarumura, Brazier, Robles, and Danish finished it off with 3 1/3 shutout innings. We had 2 hits from JBJ and Duran, 3 from JD Martinez. What were your thoughts on Hill's start today?
I thought it was another game. He's had a couple of these where he's been rolling and then things just unravel quickly. And it happened in the, what I mentioned, in the pop-up there that ended up being a double because it didn't touch anybody's glove, but it clearly should have been caught. And at that point, he would have had two outs and nobody on. And you never know. He gave up three straight hits, so all the runs were earned. And then the fourth run ended up being unearned on a Devers error, which was a play that should have been made. So it's not the first time this year that Hill hasn't had a great defensive performance behind him. I think there was a game in Detroit where the same thing happened. There was a couple questionable plays, and then he just couldn't get out of it. So, you know, probably the difference between a guy on second and one out and nobody on with two outs, you'd love to know what would have happened there. Overall, I thought he's kind of pitched the way that Rich Hill pitches, you know. Not quite a quality start, but he got into the sixth inning, and he's been a fifth starter and given them decent outings, chance to win most times out. So, you know, I thought it was just kind of more of the same, but he probably deserved a little bit of a better fate today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm with you there. Speaking of the rotation, as we get closer and closer to Sale's return, Corey indicated that he would prefer Sale to return in the rotation and not really push for him to be in a relief role just to get back to the majors quicker. Evaldi looks like he will have a minimum stay, so he should be back by the time Sale comes back. So with Sale returning, presumably to the rotation then, who is the odd man out in the rotation? Is it Hill?
I think it is, and I think... I would say that Evaldi, Sale, Pivetta, Whitlock, and Waka would have to be the five. Now, it also could work itself out. There easily could be another injury. We just saw two guys go down. You could see around the All-Star break where they could put a pitcher on the DL or IL to preserve innings with those few days off and start them on the later end. You see that happen sometimes, so you could kind of buy some more time there with Hill. I think he'd thrown 49 innings. I think that was before today, so he's around 55. I mean, I would have expected Hill to throw somewhere in the 100 to 120 range, so I could see him in the rotation for another month and then maybe being a long guy after that. I just think he's the sixth guy, which could mean he gets 5 to 8 more starts as things happen in the second half.
So something that just popped into my head, we haven't talked about on any of the podcasts that I've been on yet, but what do you think about the possibility of going to a six-man rotation to try and manage those innings with Sale coming off of, basically I think he's at like 40 innings over the last 3 years, and Hill coming off of the first season of him being over 100 innings in 7 years, to kind of manage those innings to get these guys to the end of the year. Do you think there's a chance that they move to a six-man rotation to try and keep those guys fresh to get to the end of the year?
I don't think so. It might just be that I'm not much of a fan of the six-man rotation, so I'm hoping that they don't. I think there's a better chance that you see Hill piggybacking or being the long guy coming in after a right-hand pitcher starts. It's a possibility. But I don't know that there's anybody, like, looking through the innings. Evaldi's on the IL right now. He's at 68. Pivetta's at 75. Waka, 54. Hill, 49 entering today. Whitlock, 48. Now, that's somebody who I would have said that they are going to want to limit Whitlock's innings, especially since it looked like he had a couple of starts where he wasn't throwing as hard recently. But now he's on the IL. So the only guy I could see needing to limit their innings a little bit could be Pivetta. But he hasn't had arm injuries in recent years or anything like that. So I'd like to see them stay at a five-man rotation, selfishly.
All right.
What do you think?
MVP of the series. Six-man, I could maybe see it around the All-Star break as they're like reshuffling things and going through a really tough stretch with the American League East. I don't think they have a ton of days off either. Yeah. I could see it for stretches of the season, but I don't think it would be something like they string together and do consecutively for a long period of time.
Sure.
Who's your MVP of the series?
I am going to have to go with Rafael Devers. He hit, kind of the put-away home run in each of the first two games. He only had one hit on Tuesday and Wednesday, but he had 4 hard hit balls on Savant Tuesday and 3 more on Wednesday. So somehow he had 7 hard hit balls and 2 hits. So even though he only had 2 hits, I still have to go with him because he had the 2 biggest hits of the series and the 2 wins.
Yep. That's same place I went to. All right. We'll take a quick break, come back, and preview the series against the Cardinals.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, you're up to the minute standings in the American League East. The Yankees are in first at 46-16. 9.5 games back is the Blue Jays. 11 games back of them are the Rays. Then 13 games back of them are the Red Sox. 2 games back of the Rays. And then 19.5 games back, Baltimore, who are 6.5 games back of the Red Sox. Now welcoming, I believe it is welcoming. Yeah, welcoming the Cardinals to Fenway Park. For a little 3-game series, they are first in the NL Central at 37-28. Red Sox currently at 34-30. Pitching matchups for this, we got Waka versus Wainwright, Game 1. Cutter Crawford, Dakota Hudson in Game 2. And Nick Pivetta versus Andre Pallante in Game 3. How do we feel about those matchups?
Well, I'm glad that they aren't seeing Miles Michaelis, who has come out of nowhere to be one of the great pitchers in the National League. It seems to me that they're giving him an extra day after he threw about 130 pitches on Tuesday night, coming one strike away from a no-hitter. So I guess it would be good that they're not seeing him. I think, you know, Wainwright continues to pitch well. He's been pretty good recently. I would say Pivetta Pallante is a big edge to the Red Sox with Pallante. He's went 2 innings in the last outing. I don't know if that's going to be an opener or how that one will shake out, but I would think that they have the edge. So Waka Wainwright should be a really good matchup. And Crawford Hudson, kind of similar. Crawford was great in the last game. So you think if you can get one of those two, and they should win the game on Sunday if you look exclusively at the pitching matchups and hopefully take 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Waka Wainwright, obviously kind of the headliner there, but the way Waka's been pitching, got to have a ton of confidence there. Crawford's been better as of late. And then Pivetta, whatever, it seems like that, like you pointed out, it's probably leaning towards a bullpen game from the Cardinals there. So got to feel like you've got a lot of confidence in Pivetta to handle that game on Sunday.
They find a way to pitch around Paul Goldschmidt, who is hitting .347, 16 homers, 56 RBIs, and a 1070 OPS, and is seemingly homered every at-bat the whole week. So similar to Devers, you could see that it would be the battle of two really hot players coming into the series between Devers and Goldschmidt, who are both MVP candidates at this point.
Yeah, so turning our attention there, this Cardinals team has got some pretty tough outs here in this lineup. Tommy Edman at the top. Well, let's start through that. Tommy Edman leading off. Brandon Donovan, who's kind of come out of nowhere to be pretty darn consistent for them. Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado batting 4th. Nolan Gorman batting 5th. Tyler O'Neill batting 6th. Dylan Carlson 7th. Yadier Molina 8th. Harrison Bader 9th. Tommy Edman is having an awesome season. Nolan Arenado has found himself outside of Coors this season. Having a much better year. You just outlined Paul Goldschmidt. This is a tough lineup. The top of this lineup is pretty tough. Bottom of the lineup has a lot of swing and miss in it, but the top of the lineup is very tough.
Yeah, and they've added, as you mentioned, Gorman. he was called up and has really, they put him at the top unless they're facing a left-hander. He's been up there every game and he's been playing very well and playing a good second base defensively. So that was kind of a jolt for them. And they just find a way. I mean, year after year, you look at the Cardinals on paper and they have a couple of good hitters, it seems, and then a couple players that could emerge and a middling staff. And there they are again, you know, around the top. Yeah, they are a game and a half up in the division. So yep, at the top of the division again, and they just find a way and have for, seems to be like two decades now. But definitely, you know, like I said, you know, Goldschmidt's the guy that is red hot, but you outline Edmund. I mean, 7 homers, 15 steals, and a .285 average. That's a hell of a table setter.
Yeah. And then you got Harrison Bader, 14 steals in the 9 spot. So that turning over the lineup with all of that speed, that can give Red Sox trouble there. So the good news is Harrison Bader not getting on base at nearly the same clip as Tommy Edmund. So.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool that, you know, they'll get Albert Pujols in the farewell tour. I know they haven't played the Cardinals here, I think, in 5 years. So it's good that we'll get to see Albert Pujols one last time.
Yeah. All right. What's your prediction for the series?
Yeah, I might have already alluded to it, but I'll go 2 out of 3 with a Sunday win, and hopefully they can get one other. I'll say they win on Friday and Sunday.
I'm going 2 out of 3 as well. I feel like those are the two that they'll get for wins as well. MVP?
I will say J.D. Martinez, but I am hoping that it's Trevor Story because he's kind of back slumping again. He's hit 146 in the last 10 games, and I just think he's due for that like that Seattle 4-game series earlier in the year where he hits, you know, 2 or 3 home runs, and he's just got to get it back together because he just seems to be pressing a little bit, and really all of his action has come in about a 2-week span. So I hope it's Story, but I'll conservatively go with Martinez.
Yeah, so I went with Bogarts, but I was also hoping for Story. That's kind of funny. The that same you, thing? Yeah, exact same thing.
Yeah. All right.
Great. Well, thanks for listening. We have some other great pods on the Monster Podcast Network, so keep your earbuds tuned in for everything that we're dropping here on your feed for you. You can find us at Over the Monster, where we actually haven't done roundtables all that recently, but I assume we'll pick those back up again. Then you can find me on Twitter at Spoken Keats. You can find Bob at BobBosco15. Thanks for listening, and we will be with you again on Sunday to recap the series against the Cardinals, preview the series against the Tigers.